Red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.
An image fades up from black, revealing an old analog mic and recorder on the desk inside a dark, shadowy interview room. As the tape reels slowly turn, words appear over top. A Netflix documentary, a Babka and Stop Press production. This documentary combines animated dramatizations with archival photos, footage, recorded audio, and present-day interviews.
I think we're good. All right. I'm just going to give a brief introduction and we'll go ahead and get started. We're here at the home of Dr. Henry Cohn.
We are here interviewing Mr. Alfred Bomberg.
We are interviewing Ambassador John Gunther Dean, a veteran who served at P.O. Box 1142.
A lighthouse in a storm.
I don't know to what extent it is classified. After all, this was a wartime situation.
Marching boots.
I took it very seriously and I just didn't talk about it. Certainly not to my family.
A Nazi swastika.
We had to swear, don't tell anybody where you are or what you're doing, not even your wife or your parents. The life of the nation depended on you holding to that secrecy.
A young soldier watches as classified documents burn. Words appear. During WW2, the United States operated a secret military camp near Washington, D.C. It was kept classified for over 50 years. In 2006, the National Park Service conducted interviews with its veterans, 1942.
The first memory that I have is when we were told that we were going to be taken to what turned out to be 1142. And they put us into a bus.
On a dark road at night.
All the windows were covered with wood. They couldn't see a blasted thing.
An officer addresses the young soldiers.
They suddenly said, we are going to send you to an assignment which is classified.
Everybody expected to go to Europe, but we were pulled out and nobody knew where we were going to go.
They peer around nervously at each other in the dark. One of them is wearing a shiny Star of David necklace.
We start south to Washington and I figure, what's going on here? I mean, everything was as if they were trying to keep the information away from me.
The Capitol buildings recede in the mirror.
So we're going along, and I began to see an opening in the trees. And there was a dirt road, actually. You know, where are they taking me?
Their bus stops at a barbed wire gate as a guard opens it.
And then we got off the main parkway and came to a small military installation.
Their bus drives through.
We finally got to this place, and the commander said, this is it, guys. You're not going overseas. You're staying right here.
One of our guys leaned out the window to the MP and said, what's the name of this place? And the MP came back with nothing.
Their bus rolls onward, leaving the MP behind at the gate.
I am not so sure that the people who set up this program, that they knew what the hell we were doing. There was no precedent for this kind of shit, was there?
Their bus proceeds down the wooded dirt road, heading towards some distant watchtowers as a title appears amid the dawning sky. Camp Confidential, America's Secret Nazis. Next to a microphone, the tape reels turn.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and get started here this morning. And George, if you could just start off with the most basic of basic information, could you give us your full name and place of birth?
A ship arrives in New York.
My name is George Weidinger. I was born in Vienna, Austria in 1923 and escaped to the United States on the last ship out of Europe in December of 1939.
As he stares out from the ship deck, he flashes back to flames.
It certainly was very, very frightening to me. Every synagogue in Vienna was burned. Many, many were sent to concentration camps. It was Hitler's idea to exterminate the Jews, completely get rid of us.
Voice of Rudolf Fellner.
As soon as I came to this country, I put in an application for becoming a citizen, which qualifies you to join the army.
Voice of Arno Mayer.
There were hundreds of us there, Jews who had just been called into the army. And the first question they would ask, are you prepared to fight for your new country, for America. And then you would say, yes, Your Honor. And I was all on the side of those who were going to beat the shit out of the Germans.
Boot camp.
An eye for an eye.
Voice of John Gunther Dean.
I don't think anybody had any better reason to join the army than I had. Who knew what we were fighting about?
The uniformed recruits stand in line at attention.
We finished our training. Everybody's name was called except my name. One step forward, turn left, and all they marched off. And I was the only guy left on that field.
Peter Weiss.
So the colonel called me in. Weiss, say something in German. So I gave him a famous poem by Goethe. Verreite zu spät durch Nacht und Wind. This is the father. I said, okay, enough. You're going to the 1142.
The colonel removes a folder from his desk drawer and slides it across to Weiss. The words top secret are stamped on the cover. Now back to the bus as it pulls up inside the military camp at dawn.
The bus stopped.
Arno Mayer.
And the first thing that I saw was not a very military camp.
The young soldiers file out from their bus, frowning as they stare out at the resort-like camp.
It looked like a club.
Peter Weiss.
You know, with a swimming pool and tennis courts.
I would say it didn't seem real somehow.
Arno Mayer.
We didn't know what the hell it was.
Voice of Walter Schumann.
That was immediately told, here you have no rank, no titles, you can't tell anybody what you do. This was a very big secret operation.
A bird's eye view of the peaceful camp surrounded by watchtowers.
This was actually a prison camp, right?
Well, if you want to call it that, they certainly didn't call it. They call it P.O. Box 1142. It took quite a few weeks for us to be told that all these people were going to be there, these Nazis.
Another bus pulls up as the soldiers relax by the pool, playing cards in their casual fatigue. They turn to look, watching with frozen stares as the prisoners are escorted off the bus and into the camp, some of them still wearing their SS uniforms and swastika armbands.
At that time, a Nazi was a Nazi. A German was a Nazi, and to bring him here, I mean, good God.
Arno Mayer.
I mean, you should, after you've captured some German officers, bring them to the United States. I mean, you know, what's going on here?
Rudolf Pins.
These soldiers came from all branches, artillery, infantry, SS. A lot of them were transferred directly from the front where they were captured. And without a change of clothes, they arrived at 1142.
Henry Kolm.
It was not the most comfortable feeling. Some of them were real Nazis, and they might have killed you on the spot if they could. You know, I'm Jewish, and they knew it too.
A Nazi officer smiles at them.
What were you told that your role was going to be there, your job was going to be?
Getting intelligence, which would help the United States.
The soldiers sit in a screening room to watch a newsreel.
As the war in Europe rages on, the Allies face yet another threat. Hitler's secret weapon, the V2 rockets. The V2s have been raining terror over London, costing the lives of over 50,000.
Archival photos and footage.
Werner von Braun, Hitler's chief rocket developer, intends the next generation of rockets reach even greater distances.
German rocketry was at its peak. A major risk, of course, was that Hitler would develop a rocket powerful enough to reach New York or Washington. That would have changed the whole course of the war.
A soldier interrogates a Nazi officer.
We were told to use our German to interrogate the German prisoners. Orders were, if anybody ever mentions rockets, get everything they're saying.
Subtitles.
What's your name?
Buller.
Tell me where the V2s are hidden. Up my ass.
I remember this one interrogation from September 44. This prisoner says...
Subtitles.
I can't talk. I'm an officer in the German army. All I need to give you is my name and serial number.
Then I said...
He stands.
I happen to be a German Jew.
Pounding the table.
Who was pushed out of Germany. And if you don't talk, we have methods of doing things to you and your family.
His eyes burn with rage.
A Jewish refugee from Europe. That's just about as bizarre an assignment as you could get.
The soldiers now interrogate the Nazi prisoners one by one, pointing to various classified maps and documents.
On one occasion, there was a Waffen-SS guy who wouldn't talk. Ralph said, I'll make him talk. He put this guy in an ambulance and drove him around the base for about an hour.
He swerves wildly as he drives.
Are you ready to talk now? Because if you're not, you're going to gash you. But he didn't talk. So they slammed the door shut. And Ralph said, Ivan, more gas. Turned on a vacuum cleaner and blew dust through the vent hole. And he thought he was being gassed, because that's what the Germans did. Rob let him out after a while and said, well, are you willing to talk to us now? And he talked.
The prisoner bursts out the back of the ambulance, pleading from his knees. Now an underground armament factory.
One of the great achievements of P.O. Box 1142 was the fact that we discovered a site where Hitler was building the V-2 rockets.
You know, Werner von Braun and his crew of scientists operated from a secret underground factory called Peenemünde. So we scanned the aerial photographs and interrogated prisoners, and they told us all about it.
Marked on a map.
Having found Peenemünde created the bombing of the site.
Bombers fly over at night.
I felt very good knowing that that is one of the achievements of P.O. Box 1142.
The factory explodes into flames. An actual black and white newsreel plays on a movie house screen.
Throughout the world, throngs of people hail the end of the war in Europe. It is 5 years and more since Hitler marched into Poland. Years full of suffering and death. Now the war against Germany is won. In a symbolic gesture, American troops destroy the Nazi party emblem.
A swastika emblem explodes into pieces atop a German amphitheater. The interview tape reel plays on from the old recorder.
The sequence of events, just to keep the chronology straight, is that General Bissell called us together at the Pentagon and said, gentlemen, I need to take some action which is illegal and might wind me up in jail.
The top secret folder.
There are tons of German scientists, and if we don't bring them into this country, we will lose all of that technology.
So they weren't on the books or registered or anything?
They were not. They were enemy aliens who were not allowed to come in time of war.
A lighthouse beacon.
General Bissell said, we will take over an island in Boston Harbor, and we will import these scientists illegally and take them to the island before the immigration people see the boat. So these people came over on troop ships. We imported several hundred people illegally to the island.
They arrive in fishing vessels.
I distinctly remember the time we picked up Werner von Braun and the first of his 300 people crew for Peenemünde was a storm. In the pouring rain and the howling gale, they were lowered on the ladder in a storm that was too bad for the pilot boat. They got off the ship and they came to the island. Everybody stared at these funny-looking guys with the leather coats and their funny-looking hats.
They greet von Braun on the dock with a handshake.
You want to see the stereotype of the Prussian. Tall, blonde hair, blue eyes. God damn it, it was Werner von Braun.
An actual archival photo of the scientist team.
They were an echelon of people that we thought well of. And I don't know how far advanced we were, but from what I understand, we had very little information about rocketry. There was no doubt about it.
Peter Weiss.
Rocket scientists who were essential to the Nazi war effort, now becoming essential to our war effort.
At the camp, another Nazi arrives via chauffeur.
All of a sudden, this whole aspect of what I was to do change, and then we got into what I think the real purpose of my being there was, sort of a escort public relations guy, make it comfortable for these people.
A soldier opens the door for him.
The decision was made to make me the morale officer, which is a ridiculous title to have. But somebody thought that it could serve a purpose to be nice to them.
Arno Mayer.
And then the question came up, because I hated Germans so much, could I really do it with sensitivity and so on and so forth, and not just blindly do my stuff? At which point I answered, I can't answer that question because I've never done it before.
The Nazi generals and the soldiers play games together in the country club setting.
We were told that this was to interrogate people in the friendly pretext of a chess game or a ping pong game or a tennis game. Playing volleyball. They love volleyball. The horseshoes were not known in Germany. That's what a lot of big horseshoes and the abundant horseshoes.
The lounge.
It was a regular routine that I brought them newspapers, magazines, some whiskey.
Making martinis for them.
What the hell? I didn't think that I would be fighting the Germans whom I hated with every gut that I had, that I would wind up that way. I mean, it was crazy.
Chatting beside the pool.
What was it like for you to speak with a German prisoner?
Well, I would laugh with them, joke with them. I wanted them to feel I was on their side because I was born in Germany. And you know, that maybe I lean towards Germans. But I was only trying to soften them up.
Weightlifting.
Heinz Schlüter, when he came, he was young, sports-oriented, so somebody had to go and do things with him, so I did. It was Nazi, yes, it was Nazi, and he was a Peenemünder. So what? But my job is to see what he could do for the United States.
He runs the track with them.
Well, we had a confidential fund. When it was scheduled to entertain the scientists, I would go to Colonel Dean and pick up $50 or $100, and that would pay the way.
Out on the town.
We would use one of the military buses to go to some nightclubs, dinner, and I would pay for everything.
They stroll past the neon lights. They watch a Western.
At the time, they were showing movies, and those people who cooperated were allowed to go see them. And I guess they probably appreciated the opportunity of seeing an American film.
They liked to learn about America, and they asked about America. We wanted them to get to know American culture.
The tape recorder plays on.
Was your job more to get intelligence from them, or was it more to escort them around and keep them happy?
Both.
A young soldier visits the generals as they relax in the lounge.
In December, Werner von Braun said, look, the winter is going to be very, very tough in Europe. And we would like to send packages to our families for the holidays. I said, I'll see what I can do, and I went to see the camp commander. He called the Pentagon, came back out, and said, we're to keep them happy.
The commander hands over a stack of cash.
So the following morning, they showed up.
The chauffeured car waits.
Dressed in long leather coats that Germans wear in the winter. They also had on a Tyrolese hat, and in one of them there was a little feather. I said, for God's sakes, nobody knows you, supposed to know you're here, and so on. Will you go, please go back and get dressed differently?
Arno Mayer.
The answer was, we have no other clothing. We will wear what we wear. And I go to the commander, and he said, okay, take him.
Their car pulls up outside the department store as it snows.
I'd been given $1,000, and we were driven to Landsberg Brothers. Landsberg Brothers was the largest department store in Washington, D.C., and I knew it was Jewish. So it gave me some sort of a nasty pleasure to take these guys to a Jewish department store.
A menorah on display.
So what do we start with? Coffee, tea, chocolate for the children. I said, what now?
Von Braun points at the lingerie. Subtitles.
Underwear.
Or 17 or whatever. I'd never bought any Unterwäsche. And here were these four German guys now ordering panties for their wives. Finally, the woman came out and held up a dainty nylon panty. I still only remember Werner von Braun. He said,
subtitles.
No. Made out of wool and with long legs.
People, of course, looking like crazy for these four guys, you know, speaking German, dressed in a funny way. I asked him, what next? Brassieres. Well, I never bought any brassieres, you see.
The other customers peer over.
So we're in the midst of going after the brassieres. By now, there were certain gestures being made and so on.
A clerk makes a call.
The military police arrived, the rest of us.
They are all put in handcuffs.
And we were driven back in full glory to P.O. Box 1142.
They're recording.
I mean, what the hell? You couldn't forget it. And you couldn't make it up.
A young soldier sits with the generals at a fancy dinner club.
You took them out for a spin and have a normal life. Go to town and have a piece of cake and coffee. Make it normal. They're not prisoners and being given corporal punishment. On the contrary, try to win over people.
He eyes them with disdain, flashing to an image of the London skyline as it is bombarded with rockets.
Werner von Braun developed the V-2 rocket, which killed countless numbers of people. And now he's going to work for us.
Peter Weiss.
He was treated almost as a hero.
Von Braun is depicted with a waving American flag as a backdrop.
Werner himself was a visionary. And was he a Nazi?
The stars and stripes transform into a swastika.
He did what the Nazis wanted to do, and it was his great favor. You know, ideologically, he was interested in rockets and going to the moon. He wasn't interested in what they are doing. Yeah, he made the V2s that bombed London and all that. But, you know.
Did he seem apologetic or anything for the V1s and V2s?
His attitude was that this was important progress from the viewpoint of us going into space.
Images of emaciated factory workers appear all around von Braun as he stares forward with a stern gaze.
In one of the factories in which they developed some of these weapons, they used Jews who'd been arrested by the Gestapo. He knew what was going on.
Arno Mayer.
Werner von Braun knew that there was an Auschwitz.
Words appear on a movie house screen, Nazi murder mills. First actual newsreel pictures of atrocities in Nazi murder camps. Helpless prisoners tortured to death by bestial enemy. Here is the truth.
For the first time, America can believe what they thought was impossible propaganda. Here is documentary evidence of sheer mass murder. General Eisenhower, a man hardened by the blood and shock of war, seems appalled at these unbelievable sights.
Actual archival footage.
Most dreadful of all the camps was at Buchenwald, where only 20,000 of the original 80,000 were found alive. Slave laborers worked on the V-2 bomb, serial numbers tattooed on their stomachs.
The piled victims.
Sheer mass murder. Murder that will blacken the name of Germany for the rest of recorded history.
In the barrack bunkhouse, a soldier stares sadly at a family photo.
We were not yet fully aware of the enormity of what had happened under the Nazi regime. I didn't know that at the time, but my grandfather, an uncle, an aunt, cousin, and other relatives all died in the Holocaust.
Peter Weiss.
Like so many others.
Jewish captives are taken in boxcars to the concentration camps.
You're shocked at what happened, you know. After you hear what happened in Auschwitz, there isn't anything to shock you much more. I don't think it would have helped if I told everybody about my feeling, pride. Certainly wouldn't have helped my parents.
They all mourn in the bunkhouse.
Almost all of us were refugees from Nazism. We would have preferred to treat them as the war criminals that they were.
He peers out the window.
But when you're in the army, You follow orders.
He sees two generals schmoozing outside.
I tried to suppress the rage because I wouldn't have been very effective if I had acted as if I wanted to kill him.
Another soldier steps out for a smoke.
It was unpleasant, to put it mildly. I mean, I'd almost feel like vomiting for the very simple reason I had to be nice to these guys. And the only question that I ask myself is, what did they do during the war?
Head bowed, he watches as two more Nazi generals happily stroll by. The tape recorder plays on.
Could we just talk a little bit more about your role as a morale officer?
Only the morale officer would translate sermons at Christmas.
As snow falls outside, the soldiers join the Nazi generals in the chapel for the night service.
They said that it's Christmas and we'd like to have a Christmas mass. They got a room which was very private. They all showed up. Then there was first the Catholic sermon, and after that, the Protestant one. And then it fell to me to translate these two fucking sermons from English into German.
Arno Mayer.
They were very pleased. In fact, they were so pleased that they invited me to come have a drink with them. It drove me absolutely crazy.
He storms outside, leaving the party.
I couldn't have anything humane with them. I couldn't.
He peers back in on them.
Behind my back, they refer to me as the kleine Judenbube, the little Jew boy.
They see him at the window.
You know, in your best dreams or nightmares, you couldn't have expected to become the morale officer of these high animals. I mean, the hatred within me was so strong, I couldn't resist it. Because as far as I'm concerned, they were a sense of bitches and I wanted them dead.
He trudges away through the falling snow.
What did you think was going to happen to these people?
If they sent us to Washington to buy Christmas presents for their relatives...
Peter Weiss.
They were not likely to be charged with crimes.
He smokes in his top bunk.
I casually went to bed and found myself thinking, what am I doing here?
He daydreams.
I did wonder whether I could go to the colonel in charge and say, I really can't do this.
Handing in his stripes.
Well, you didn't do things like that when you were in the army. And also, you didn't do things like that when you were a recent refugee.
Now a split screen shows a soldier reviewing the recorded intel in private while the Nazi generals lounge at the pool.
We were trying to help the U.S. government obtain intelligence, and it came in various forms. Maybe 1142 was the beginning of a diplomatic approach to obtaining intelligence. I'm going to say something which, up to you whether you want to keep it in there.
A Nazi emblem floats by, followed by a Russian hammer and sickle.
We were not only interested in what the Germans were able to do, but we were also interested in knowing about our ally at the time, the Soviet Union. And that became an important element.
An atomic bomb falls from the sky.
Mutual suspicion.
The White House.
Among the Western world and the Russian world.
The Kremlin.
Predated even the Second World War.
Missiles on both sides.
The new policy coming out of Washington was to keep people who were useful from falling into the hands of the Soviet Union.
It was a battle between Russia and the United States who could get the most German scientists. We got Werner von Braun, you know, which is very good to have.
A soldier writes a letter.
When my parents asked me, what are you doing? The phrase that I kept using over and over and over again was always, I'm preparing World War III.
As he writes, an ominous mushroom cloud appears behind him.
In my judgment,
Arno Mayer,
I would say that the Cold War started a hell of a lot earlier than anybody thinks these days. What I was doing without knowing it That's really what it was all about.
Cars wait to chauffeur the generals from the camp with their luggage.
We were told they were not prisoners of war. They were actually in our employ. In fact, they were on a per diem.
Von Braun tips his hat as a soldier opens his door.
They were promised a fairly rapid naturalization. And then also they were promised that their families could follow.
The car drives away.
They took care of their families. And in many cases, they were encouraged to immigrate, that is to say, become American citizens. We offered them the future. But a lot of them had strong Nazi backgrounds. And we were a little disturbed that they would be given tremendous opportunities to do well in the United States, certainly better than a lot of other people.
The NASA symbol. Actual rocket launch footage.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9.
Well, a lot of these people were then shipped off to Texas, where they were going to work on the rocketry program. And that turned into the Apollo project, leading America to land the first man on the moon.
Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, all engine running. Liftoff, we have a liftoff, 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11. Tower cleared.
Von Braun observes from the control tower.
It goes back to the question of whether you can do bad things to achieve good ends.
A crowd looks on in awe.
And I would say that if you do that, then the end that you achieve is not worthwhile.
A parade sign reads, "Socket to Mars Von Braun," as he waves from the Marshall car, then is carried on shoulders to a podium to make a speech as words appear. Over 1,600 German scientists were brought to the U.S. Many were hired by the CIA and NASA. They were never charged for their participation in Nazi war crimes.
With your continued support, I will see you back in orbit with that new space station, and maybe one day we'll have a man on Mars. Thank you.
Von Braun steps away from the mic and bows his head. Archival footage of a demolition. A man pushes a detonator plunger, and a brick building implodes. More words appear. Post Office Box 1142 was bulldozed in 1946. All documents and recordings were either destroyed or classified. The Jewish soldiers were sworn to secrecy. Many took their story to their graves. Peter and Arno lived to tell their story. Archival photos of Peter and Arno as young soldiers. Now photos of each individual soldier are shown alongside their animated likenesses as they were portrayed during the preceding dramatizations. The screen fades to black as credits appear. Audio description by Descriptive Video Works. Directed by Daniel Sivan and Mor Lushi. Producers Benji Berkman and Jono Berkman. And Daniel Sivan and Mor Lushi. Editors Daniel Sivan and Mor Lushi. Editing consultants James Haygood. Design and animation Little Blackstone. Original music Antonio Pinto and Eduardo Ehram. Sound design and mix Jos Applebaum. Color grading, Yoav Raz. Copyright 2021, Stop Press Productions. Babka Netflix Worldwide Entertainment. Logos appear in Succession 4, the Israel Film Council, and Ministry of Culture and Sport, the Rabinovich Foundation, Zukunft der Republik Österreich, Stop Press Productions, and Babka.
A red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.